Raised Rowdy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
We got Mr. Zach Williams from the Lone Bellow. Welcome, brother.
Yeah, hello.
Thank you, and welcome, as Kurt said. Appreciate you being here. I am a fan, a longtime fan. I've got to see you back in Pittsburgh before I moved to Nashville.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So super cool to have you here.
Oh, I love Pittsburgh.
I do too. Same. It's been a blessing of a place to be from, and I saw you at Mr. Small's.
Yeah.
Love that room. And the show I got to see you guys play there for the first time was where all three of you guys were sharing one microphone.
Oh, yeah.
And just the experience that that gave to the crowd, as well as like me being a first time person actually seeing it live as opposed to just listening to the records, was such a cool experience and something that I think back on in my musical journey of like something that sticks out and is just very, very special.
Dude, right on.
Yeah. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, man.
What year was that?
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Pre-COVID.
Yeah, that's all I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So crazy.
It's like the 96 Olympics and then COVID and everything's just kind of blurry around those two things.
Yeah. It's it was because it was before I moved here. So I moved here in 2020. So maybe.
That's awesome.
My mom is from Wilkinsburg.
Okay. Yeah.
My great-grandpa helped build the Cathedral of Learning.
Yeah.
And it's like old family lore. I guess while he was helping build it, his best friend fell, and he tried to save him, and he grabbed him, and they both died. They both.
Wow.
And, I mean, I didn't. It was in, like, the 1920s or 30s.
Yeah.
And we were playing a show out in front of the Cathedral of Learning one time. And you know how hard it is, like, you got your instrument, you're trying to tune, you got to, like, say stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, my great-grandpa, like, died. Just totally brought it down. But it turns out that the mayor was in the audience, and he actually, he went back in the archives of, like, the Pittsburgh newspaper and found it and sent me, like, a little snippet copy. So it all of a sudden went from family lore to this, like, oh, my gosh, it actually happened.
Yeah.
It was rad.
Crazy.
I love Pittsburgh.
Me too. Very fun city and honestly great music scene. Like,
yeah.
Mr. Small's, just the collection of music that they bring there from the, you know, indie side, Americana, mainstream country. I mean, a little bit of everything. I even think they've had Guar play there a few times.
Yeah.
So, nice. A little bit of everything.
That's a middle of the winter show for Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Let's go see Guar.
Yeah, yeah. Get some blood on you in the front row, you know?
That's crazy. You're playing a show and you're like, this is the room my great-great-grandfather died in, or great-grandfather died in.
Well, it was outside in the yard right in front of the Cathedral of Learning. Okay. Is this really creepy, old, beautiful building.
Yeah.
Close to Pitt.
Yeah, on the university campus of Pittsburgh.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that the stadium that we played?
Well, you guys were at Heinz Field. Yeah, so Heinz Field's not super close to the stadium. The basketball arena is where the old football stadium used to be.
I get Penn and Pitt confused, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea, dude.
Yeah.
I honestly might be talking about Penn.
Yeah. No, it's Pitt. I was a Pitt grad, but I didn't go to main campus. Like, in the city, I went to, like, a sub-campus. But the Cathedral of Learning is, like, where all the classes used to be. And then as it grew at, like, you know, more buildings across the...
Did you guys have, like, sub-campus parties, or was it, like, everybody just wanted to be a part of the main campus parties?
I mean, we definitely partied a lot of the sub-campuses, too.
My sub-campus party.
But,
I bet you it went a little harder than the regular party.
Yeah, possibly. You know, the sub-campus was, like, my SAT score is not quite good enough to get into main campus, and then you got there, and you're like, well, I got a job here now, so I'm not going to leave.
That's true.
Yeah. I had planned on, like, 2 years at the sub-campus and 2 years at the main campus, and then I got a girlfriend, so, you know, she was 2 years younger, so I stayed there the whole 4 years.
Did you stay with her?
No.
It didn't work out?
No.
But you got your degree?
Yep, got my degree.
That's what's up.
In poli-sci, and I'm using
and podcasting
that right now.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was going to go be like an education teacher, but.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. Then I was like, I went and did my pre-student teaching, and I was like, I don't know if this is for me.
I used to be a teacher also. I taught high school and middle school.
No way.
Guitar, yeah.
Where?
East Nashville Magnet.
Oh.
You know, right over there, like by Five Points. You know where where they sell Christmas trees? Yeah, I used to work there for a year, and McGavick Middle and Donaldson Middle School. And it was East Nashville Magnet was cool. Working in a middle school, it was like the worst job of my life. Like, I'd rather put up drywall or something. Like, get up at 5 a.m. and go do that.
Was it just like middle school? I had the banter of the children?
35 middle schoolers that didn't elect to take guitar class.
Oh, no.
And they're all just banging on the guitars. And I'm like, don't hurt the guitars. And they're like, and they're just saying the worst shit to each other. I'm just like,
it's awful.
Oh, God. What was your worst job?
My worst job was probably CC's Pizza.
Okay.
I was the dishwasher. But I would get behind, and then I would just like hose them down and just like send it back out.
You're like, they're
without
fine.
Any soap.
Oh, brutal.
Just like hot water. But the crazy thing is the regular CC's Pizza, you know, customer like doesn't really mind if the plates are dirty or not.
Yeah, you got to be in a special mindset to go into CC's and sit down and just like go to town on that stuff.
You know what you're getting into.
It's
a post-Guar in Pittsburgh kind of vibe.
There it is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're
the perfect version.
You're high and drunk. And yeah. That's fucking funny.
Just want some dessert pizza, please.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only gone into CC's Pizza on purpose like one time.
Same.
And then I was like, we shouldn't do this again. But then I've had friends talk me into going back. You know,
see,
they're like, we should go to CC's Pizza. And I'm like, we should just get some pizza somewhere else. And they're like, no, we should go to CC's Pizza. I'm like, I mean, I'll go on this journey.
Was it in Gatlinburg? Was it when you bought the
the eagle knife?
Yeah.
I think it was in Antioch mostly.
that tracks.
Yeah. But no, it's all of the things that get you there, you know?
So here we are now. That's right.
Dude.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into the music a little bit. Why not? First of all, this record is, you know, Nick said he was a longtime fan. I'm a new time fan.
Oh, sweet.
And so Nick's like, dude, check this out. What do you think for podcast? And I just put it on and immediately it's just, everything is so fucking catchy.
Ah,
dude, it's awesome. The record's so sick. I think for me, it's sort of like everything feels familiar and fresh at the same time. I think we've talked about like that 80-20 thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if it's too familiar, then it's like, you know, maybe that would be boring, but if it's too fresh, it's like kind of, it's like in the sweet spot for me where I just like can just listen to it over and over again.
Dude, we did this thing this go around where like, you know, sometimes you quietly are like, oh, maybe we need like an upbeat song for the radio team or maybe da da da. And this time we just didn't follow any rules. Even like usually we're like, that's too cheesy. We don't want to be cheesy. And we just like took out that barrier and just like had fun with each other. And I love what it ended up happening.
You did a lot of writing. I read like in an old firehouse studio.
Yeah. In Henderson, Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
Peter Barbie. I don't know if you've ever met Peter. He rules. Peter and our wonderful piano player, Tyler James, completely refurbished this abandoned firehouse in Henderson, Kentucky. Like, it hadn't had a roof since like the 1950s. Like, it was like super abandoned.
Yeah.
And they lived in a school bus outside, and it's not like a super safe neighborhood. I wouldn't have been able to live in the school bus. I'm a baby. I would have been so scared and of the dark at night. But they did. They braved it, and they built this rad studio that you can just go like, there's just bunks. You can just go sleep there and work all day and just like, I don't know, do it to it. But we did this thing where we wanted to see what it would be like if we just made, and this is like kind of inside baseball talk here, but bear with me.
Yeah.
But like,
that's what we're here for.
Good. Okay. Well, we did this thing where we, for the majority of the songs, we just made the like the writing, like the intellectual property, like, even split between all five band members, no matter what, just to like see what kind of energy that would create. And it ended up creating like so much ownership, so much passion and fun. And, I'm glad we did it. I'd never done it before.
That's so interesting. Cause, like I do recording sessions frequently, but it's like, you know, I go in, there's like a master scale. If it's like playing on a master, or if I'm just doing like anything, I'm going to, you know, charge a couple $100 and just go play on this song. You know what I mean? And it's like, sometimes the song's great. Sometimes it's, I go in and it's like just me replacing a fucking Suno line or whatever. And, but you know, sometimes it's like, if I'm getting part of the song, it's like, you're going to play differently, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like, at least think about it differently.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And we, it was our touring band. Julian Dorio was on the drums, and man, I don't know if you guys have ever met Julian here in town, but he was with Eagles of Death Metal.
Oh, cool.
He was with Eagles of Death Metal during the Paris attack, and he, you know, his band, followed around the Kings of Leon for like 7 years. He's just like this super rock and roll guy. He went on to do the Stephen Wilson Jr. Record.
Oh,
and okay. Man, it was just so fun having him. And then Tyler's been around the Nashville songwriting scene for probably like 20 something years. And he's just such a sweet soul.
That's the keys player?
Yeah.
Who's playing all the slide pedal steel stuff?
The pedal steel stuff. I think that we had Scotty Murray do some of it.
Oh, cool.
Maybe even a lot. You know Scotty?
Yeah, yeah.
Scotty and Johnny?
Mm-hmm.
Freaking love those
brothers. Scotty plays with Steven, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. He's a great guy. He's super funny.
Dude, somebody needs to make a documentary about Scotty and Johnny Murray. I mean, for years, they would only tour together. They were a package deal. And they like live together. They're best friends. They share a dog and a house. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. They're like... They kind of remind me, there's these guys on Gallatin at this place called Madison Glass. Have you ever wandered in a Madison Glass?
Is it like a kind of a spot where people do photo shoots and stuff?
No, okay. It's they just fix glass.
Okay,
but
absolutely
I
not.
I swear, the two old men that run it are Scotty and Johnny from like another dimension.
That's great.
So you guys got together in the studio in Kentucky, wrote the record, but you didn't cut the record there.
We cut a lot of it there.
Oh, okay.
And then we basically went down to Muscle Shoals and just like challenged all the sound, like pushed back. And then we did all the vocals down there and stuff like that. So yeah, it was like, it's really more of a time capsule than any other record I've been a part of.
Were you guys at Fame?
No, we were at some other studio. I can't remember the name of it.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. I love Muscle Shoals. I've gotten to cut down there, but it's fun to get out of Nashville a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've only done one record in Nashville, or I guess two, but we self-produced the second one, so I don't know if that counts.
Was it one with Dave?
Yeah, we did one with Dave Cobb at RCA.
That's cool.
And that was really fun. And then the second one, we found Roy Orbison's like old house that's next to Johnny Cash's burned down house. And we like cold called the guy that owned it because no one lived in it. And he lived in Chicago. And he gave us the house and let us turn it into a studio for like a few months.
That's cool.
It was super creepy and awesome. It was like a party house. So there's only, it was like 7,000 square feet probably, but there was only two bedrooms. And the bedrooms were like smaller than this room. It's probably like 300 square feet, 400 square Crazy. Feet a bedroom. And everything else was just massive. Party house living rooms and an abandoned pool in the basement.
Whoa, that's like the Eagles Nest or whatever.
Dude.
Milwaukee.
It was like, there's this guy named Braxton Dixon that built all of those old houses like back in the 60s and 70s and 80s for like all the country greats, but a lot of them burned down, including Johnny Cash's.
There's got to be a song
dude,
in there.
And Roy Orbison's. The house that burned down that like Roy Orbison's children died in. Bro, same builder. He went back to the same builder and was like, can you do it? Can you build me another one?
Crazy.
So that was the guy that built the house that we were in. But he like does a road trip around the country for like a couple years whenever he would build a house, and he would like collect old things and build like mansions out of like barn wood and
reclaimed
stuff. So. But I think they also did all the electrical, which is why they maybe burned down a lot.
That's got to be like a spooky sort of country song.
Right?
Like The Ride or something. But about burned down houses or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not good at making up songs, but that's your job.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to figure that one out.
Interesting.
Well, all this all this stuff is great, and you know, it really comes out on the record. I was wondering, since you guys are using your touring band and your homies, and it's sort of like a closed circuit, right? You're not bringing in a ton of other people. Did that like sort of give you some creative ideas by like sort of limiting the people that were involved?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the making of the record, and Brian Elmquist in our band like produced it. And I think that the making of the record really had a lot to do with just like the energy between us. Just like we like, we're one of those bands that like enjoys being around each other most of the time. Mm-hmm. Very blessed to have that kind of situation. But I think that that like fell into just the freedom around what we were trying to do with each song. Like, for instance, there's one song that only has 18 words, and it's just like a really stretched out, weird, beautiful song. We've never done that before. All of our songs are always like lyrical, heavy, like story songs kind of vibe. So it was great, man. I'm nervous about releasing it this week.
I wouldn't be.
Dude, thanks, dude.
I would be so fucking proud if this was my record.
Yeah.
Man. I'd be like, done.
Suckers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, but like, when you're the label, you're like, here. And then you're like, wait, I'm the label.
Oh yeah.
We started our own label on this one. And we're distributing it through what, 30 Tiger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tracks.
Which they've been a lot of fun. Nancy Quinn is my next door neighbor. But anyway, yeah, dude.
How's that process like change from having a true like label partner to 30 Tigers? I'm sure,
yeah,
a very robust thing.
I know.
Is it feel more intimate, or feel like you're more connected to it, or you less just,
more work?
Yeah,
you just know where the money's going.
Yeah,
like for instance, a couple weeks ago, management called and was like, "Hey, they want you to do CBS Saturday morning." And I was like, "Great, I love those guys." They're like, "Yeah, so it's $15,000." You'll pay the production company. And I was like the union, like the camera guys. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, did not know that. I've played that multiple times. Didn't know that the artist was paying for the,
yeah.
So you just like learn things like that when you're like the quote unquote label.
Yeah.
But it's also been really fun. Like you can't whine or you can't bitch to anybody anymore. You can't be like, oh, we shouldn't have made that music video, because it's your money and it's your decisions.
Yeah.
So we did a thing where we were like, what do we hate doing?
And podcasts.
Like, yeah. No, I actually really like podcasts. I was like social media, like singing into the back of a phone. Just like, yeah. I don't know. You guys know.
It's of course.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody hates
so
it.
We just, instead of like making music videos, we were like, let's hire people that enjoy doing that. And that's been really rad.
Nice.
For your social clips and stuff.
Yeah, and they bring in their passion and energy, and we just show up and do the thing that we're passionate about. That's been probably one of my favorite things about doing it ourselves this go around.
Love that.
I love the video that's like one long cut when you guys are on the couch.
Yeah.
Like, how did that come about?
That was Olivia's idea from dude, I'm so bad with like names of companies. From the name of the company that we
oh
work
yeah
with,
yeah yeah company name.
I
yeah,
like,
yeah.
really like those guys. Yeah, that was her idea. But basically, we had to sing all the lyrics like in slow motion, and then she just had all the people in the production like move all the stuff around. But they had to move at regular speed. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard singing a slow song in slow motion. Making sure your eyes don't do stupid things.
Four,
like, yeah, it took forever.
Yeah, it took twice as long.
Twice as long, maybe even longer.
So what happens is you sing at half speed, then they speed up the tape, you know, twice as fast, and so you guys look regular, and everyone else is zooming around you guys.
Yeah,
that's the vibe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super cool, and it's catchy on the screen. You know what I mean? Like, there's something to look at, and then there's the music. I always like. My ADHD brain always needs two things at once, mm-hmm. So that video accomplished that thing
oh, man.
Very well.
I've never thought about that. That's two things at once.
Yeah.
That's like an ADHD thing.
For sure.
I've never been tested. I'm sure I super have it.
Yeah, I had been tested when I was a kid, and they tried to put me on Ritalin. I'm 43.
Dude,
so.
Ritalin.
Yeah, it was.
Those were the days.
Nostalgic drug.
And my mom was like, we're not putting my baby on that. So I've just been just raw dogging unmedicated life this whole time, you know?
Oh, I love it.
What makes you think that you have it?
I mean, I got the fool beat out of me when I was a kid all the time. Like, I grew up in one of those houses where it was like bad grades meant a whooping,
mm-hmm.
which was really confusing. You know, it's like I just lived in fear all the time because I made bad grades, but I just couldn't concentrate the way that the teacher needed me to concentrate, right? I was just like way more excited about like the people sitting next to me than I was like the guitar teacher trying to teach me how to play the guitar.
Yeah. How to play Radioactive by Imagine Dragons.
No, that's me, like 100%. I had to like teach myself ways of learning. So like I'd have to make flashcards, and I'd put a word or a phrase that I needed to remember next to a picture, so that I could like match those two up in my brain. Just coping mechanisms that I figured out over time. Just
on your own.
Yeah, just trying it, just figuring it out. And then I mean now there's like therapies, and you know they have.
Super
data.
Ritalin.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Adderall. Yeah. No, they have better like ideas of like ways to do that. And I mean, even when I was in college, like learning to be an educator, right? Yeah. Which is like really what I went to school for. Like they were like, here's different ways that you can teach different kids, and here's how you can build a lesson plan to positively impact the people that learn this way. Dude. You know? So by that time it was like you're paying attention to how people learn.
Man.
But back in my day, it was just my teacher yelling at me and dumping out my desk. You
right.
know?
Yeah. I just got to go to like the special class all the time.
Yeah.
That was fun. Just being escorted out in the middle of class.
Yeah.
All your friends are like, idiot. Like, shut up.
My third grade teacher, I mean, I still remember to this day, so that tells you something about it. The number of times she like dumped out my desk for being too messy or like, I was left-handed, but I would like use right-handed scissors in my left hand, and then she's like, well, let me get you left-handed scissors, and then I would just have them in my right hand, just not even thinking about what I'm doing, and then she would get mad about that, you know?
I've definitely pissed off some teachers, for sure.
It happens. That's part of being a kid.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think that's part of the thing that makes you, or makes me creative also, mm-hmm. is just like trying to find ways to get around what would be considered normal, you know?
Yeah.
And just alternative means of doing so. Like, even stupid stuff like making a meme, you know? Like, I had no idea how to make Photoshop, but I could, like, piece these two random apps together and make a meme, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, like, whatever that medium is, there's no right way to get to where you're going. It's how you get there.
Yeah, mom.
You know? When did you move to Nashville? Because I know you guys were Brooklyn-based. Like, what time frame?
16. Yeah, like January of 2016. So I was in New York from 06 to 16.
Yeah.
And I did like my solo thing for the first like 7 years that I was there. Mm-hmm. And then just like wanted to be more of like a part of something.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things where like I had these great guys that were playing with me. They were all Canadian. They were super polite, too polite. And I just like, it was always yes. There was no. It was just like not the way my brain functioned. So I wanted to be like a spoke in a wheel.
Yeah.
We started the Lone Velo, and it was fun, man. It was a wild, like establishing the band was a wild time in my life. There was a lot of pulls and getting pulled in different directions. And like back then it was like you really wanted to get signed to a label. So there's all these promises always like floating around you, and you don't know who to believe, and people trying to take advantage of you, and you're trying to figure it out. And then while all that was going on, like the three of us were like, hey, let's make this thing together. Even though the label was like, don't. So I'm glad that we did. I'm glad that we pushed through, man.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, the beauty of your guys' music is the three voices together. It's,
yeah.
It sounds like, I always say, like, the sum of the parts sometimes is better than each separate. And
yeah, man.
That's 1,000%. Like, when you see one of your guys' shows, the emotion that you guys put in together is absolutely incredible.
Dude, they've been, I mean, Kaneen and Brian are just such good friends. Like, but they also, they're very, like, selfless. They're just like really humble people. And even especially in the beginning, like we started the Lone Bellow, like I went through this horrible time in my marriage and wrote all these sad lyrics and like had to hide the lyrics into something. So I was like living in Brooklyn, but I was like, well, I grew up on country music. I can hide these lyrics in country music. That's what country music's always been great doing. And they came along with me and like they just always have my back, man. It's been amazing. And we've been together for like 15 years. And I don't know if there's a terrible amount of bands that do that in general.
Not successfully.
So I'm honored, man. I'm honored to be able to work with them.
Yeah, you don't see as many bands around.
It's tough. I've even remembered talking to like manager friends about that kind of in the country world. And they're like, a band's tough because it's like, who's your client?
Yeah.
You know, is your client the main person or is your client all three of these equal people that all
Brooks
have different
are
opinions?
Dumb, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different thing, you know? So it's like same thing on publishing, right? So like there's significant revenue in publishing. So if one of the members is writing all the songs, then one of the members is significantly richer than the other one if it's working, you know? So it's like, that's a challenging thing too.
It is, man. It's challenging, and we've we've dealt with all of it, and I'm not saying that we've like found the way, but I do think that we have found a way to be honest with each other.
Yeah,
and like we know how to fight fair.
Yeah.
And I don't know where we're going, but I know that we know how to go.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
That's great.
I think that's the biggest part, because then you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like raising kids together and like we're all in Inglewood. Like, it's been insane. Now all of our kids are like good friends and it's wild.
How old are y'all's kids?
I have 4. My oldest is at Hume Fog. She's 17. And then my second is 15, and my third is 12, and my fourth is a boy, and he's 9. And he's an interesting guy. We just moved to like a new street. We didn't have any like neighbors that wanted to talk to us at our old street, and my little buddy's like super social. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like a Dennis the Menace kind of guy. And we moved to the street that has all these like rad old ladies, and he just like befriended all of them. And I guess that there's like these secret tunnels in their backyards. There's like entrances because we live like on the cliff, and there's all these like wild old tunnels.
Yeah.
Under there that like you can stand up in and like walk a mile. You can walk to Home Depot from. It's
crazy.
It's all there.
That's
not
awesome.
He's not allowed to go down there, but like
he does, I'm sure
he's gonna get down there.
Yeah.
But I just love it. He's really fallen in love with all these old ladies, and there's these 6 old ladies that he's met on our new street that we live on, and they've all been best friends since they were little girls, and they all like their parents built their houses like in the 1940s, and they all moved away and like, you know, went to college, like had families, had jobs, da da da. And then their parents passed away, and all 6 of them moved back. So we live in the middle of all of them. And Harlan, my son Harlan, has like gotten to know all these little old ladies. And there's this one, I guess, that's like a hoarder, and she's like kind of lost her mind a little bit. And they're like, "Hey, Harlan, you can come and help me with my flowers and like hang out, but like, she'll." Take you inside and eat you. But the thing is I guess she has a secret entrance in her basement that goes like 100 feet down into the ground, and then the tunnel like opens up on the face of the cliff on the Cumberland. So he's like really pining to get down there.
It's a good place to throw a body down there.
I mean, there's ladders down there that like go deeper down. Like, it's really wild.
That's crazy.
This is a movie, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a movie for sure.
You know that...
The Sisterhood of the Underground Tunnel or something. France. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like old people Goonies.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There was a movie called Nashville, like filmed in the 1970s, and it was filmed right there.
Oh, really?
Oh, I've never seen it. I want to watch it.
I think Ernest Scared. No, Ernest, the Halloween Ernest was filmed in East Nashville.
No way.
Yeah.
Dude.
There you go. We should have him on the
different kind of podcast.
Yeah.
John Cena is like turning into Ernest. Like, have you seen his face? He's like becoming.
He's Ernestifying.
I think so.
Yeah. Maybe he could reboot that franchise
easily.
John Cena Scared Stupid.
Oh man.
Bro, one make a wish away. He could do that no problem at all.
Yeah, that's his thing, right? Good guy.
Gosh.
Truly, it's amazing.
Crazy.
Oh, that's crazy. Man, I want to go check out these underground layers and
we're
stuff.
We're going to have to
play
D&D
down there or something.
Yeah. Well, there's one that I really want to go to. I went to like the Inglewood like public meeting, which it's like walking into a physical Facebook page. Like,
that sounds terrible.
Like, it was different. Like, everybody had like iPhones, like huge iPhones clipped to their belts and like, you know, strong opinions. It was in the basement of Lytton Middle School.
Okay.
And I met this...
Can't hide the Lytton pride.
Right? Yeah, they can't hide it. They haven't changed that sign in the 10 years I've lived here.
Same.
But I guess I met this old lady that lives in Tanglewood, which is like the secret cabins underneath Briley right there. And she was telling me that basically, like, you're on Gallatin, you're getting off Gallatin and getting on Briley. There's a Shell station right there on the right. Okay, and then there's this like new apartment building they built. She says that they built that apartment building on a massive cave that's like 50 feet in diameter and like 30 feet tall. And like, what? Her and her homies used to like go and hang out there in high school, and like the whole building's just sitting on it.
That's spooky. Crazy. I knew you were gonna say ancient Indian burial ground. Were you thinking that?
No.
Oh, okay. That's just me. I was like, that's terrifying. This has to be a movie. Let's go over there. That's by the there's the bowling alley right on the other side, kind of, right?
Yeah.
The shawarma and the daddy's dogs. Let's go get a dog and go spelunking
in
East Nashville.
And they're so passionate about it. Like, I didn't know that, like, the old school Inglewood people like don't like Home Depot because Home Depot tore down Jim Reeves' old house. And I guess all of the like water comes from that area that like carved out all these tunnels. Anyway, it's nuts.
That's interesting.
that is so cool.
Yeah, that is absolutely a movie. Just not made yet, I guess. But you gotta do a video down in the tunnels.
Yeah, you guys singing with some reverb down in there.
Yeah.
I know. I'm scared, man. I told you guys I couldn't even sleep on that bus.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Scared of the dark.
Fear of the dark. All right, well, let's talk about live shows since Nick has seen you live and I haven't. You guys are playing the Ryman.
Well, we played the Ryman.
Okay, that's passed already. Shit.
Loser.
Yeah.
How
was that?
It was amazing. It's one of those things where like whenever we have a really, really good show, I usually can't remember it because my brain just like goes completely somewhere else. So, like, I remember right before the show and then, like, an hour after. But I remember feeling amazing.
Yeah.
And laying on the ground. But that was it. That's all I remembered.
I've definitely played shows where you kind of, like, black out.
Right.
Yeah. And you're like, how did I do that? Like, it's kind of like when you get in your car and you're like, you turn your car on and then you're at the gym and you're like, I don't remember how I got here, kind of a thing. Sort of like that, but, like, in a great way.
Yeah.
That's why I've had that happen before.
Well, I mean, I have this issue with like live shows where I'll have like an existential crisis like during every show. Like, I'll be like, how am I doing this, or why am I doing this, or am I being honest with myself? And like, I'll have this like wrestle in my mind while we're singing the songs and playing the show, like, how am I doing this, or why am I doing this? But every now and then I'll play a show where I just like get to be a part of just the beauty of being alive in a room with a bunch of people. And whenever that happens, it's like such a gift to just like let go of those like whispers and lean into just being alive with the other people.
That's the gift you give to the fans, man. I mean, that's the whole thing for a person working a 9-to-5 job, you know, getting to have some experiences with you like that. That's what it's all about. I mean, that's why people pay for tickets, you know?
Yeah, man. I'm so thankful. So thankful for people that are coming out to shows, dude.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's a weird time in live shows for sure, you know?
Truly, man.
Yeah, since COVID and just like, just the live show basis has been on the backs of, all right, come out and drink alcohol enough for the venue to make money.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, times are changing and people's tendencies to consume are changing.
That's
and,
true.
So it's like tougher for venues to have as many gigs as they used to too.
Yeah. And it's like a total monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's no fun.
Yeah. Not great. Yeah.
not the best.
Yeah. It's and the small guys have to either move along or get big enough so they can compete with a monopoly, and then they're almost a monopoly too.
Right.
You know, it's an interesting time, but like also it's, you know, how do you connect with the fans enough now to get them to not only come see you once, but come see you every time you come through?
Buy
you
a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And alcohol.
Yeah. To keep the venue alive. Yeah.
I know. I don't know. I mean, I think my goal is just to like try to be as honest with myself as possible, like when we're creating the stuff, but then also like creating the night. And like that's my only temperature gauge. I know that sounds so lame, but like I don't know any other way.
Yeah. Well, it's working, so.
Right.
Yeah. That's a big part of the whole thing is just like, how do you make that live show? For me, watching your guys' live show, it feels intimate.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're a part of the thing, like kind of like you talked about where when you let go, you feel a part of it. When I saw you guys all three at the one microphone, and even the lighting in that room was fantastic, and just you just feel like I was halfway in the crowd and I felt like I was right in the circle with you guys, you know?
That's what's been so rad about like being in this band, where there's like three people that all have equal ownership and say, and we can sing around one mic. And if we're careful, we can create a situation where it's not like us singing to people, but it's us like inviting everyone in to do something together. And that might not be singing along, but just being alive together for a minute and like present. And those are my favorite nights. Damn. And we've been blessed to have a lot of those over the years. So I'm really interested to see what these new songs will be like live.
Yeah. Sonically, a little bit, like you talk, I mean, every record changes, of course, but it almost seems like there's like a little bit of, like where you talked about like re-listenability, like it almost like a little bit of pop sensibility in there, maybe even more than in previous stuff.
Dude, I mean, well, there's two things that stand out to me that we did, that I'm glad that we did it, but at the moment it was like scary, where we were like, are we being lame? The first one was there's a song called I'm Here for You, and Jimmy Buffett died while we were working on that song, and I was like, I want to try to like salute the Jimmy Buffett fans, because I love those people. Those are like Those are my people.
Parrot heads.
Yeah, yeah, man. They're just like working hard and like save up their money and go to some show at a beach and just like, I don't know. They're just fun, dude. Mm-hmm. So like we try to do that. So like the very beginning of the song, Julian, as a joke, played the wind chimes. Shit. And I was like, that has to stay. And he was like, it will not. And you got to remember, this is like the most rock and roll person in the room. Mm-hmm. And we're all like, sorry, man. I know you did that as a joke, but that's the beginning of the song now. So it stayed.
Love it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's another one where like I was joking around with my homies, and we all found out that we're like secretly huge Michael Bolton fans.
He's great.
Right.
Yeah.
And Aaron Ratier and Anderson East were actually working on a record with Michael Bolton. And I was like, I'm going to try to write a Michael Bolton melody, and I'm going to try to get it to him and maybe like get him to sing. And it turned out he got like really sick, so it didn't work out. But we did the song anyway. So yeah, one of the songs is like totally written for Michael Bolton to sing, but we just did it.
Yeah, I got to go back and re-listen to the record and try to figure out which is the Michael Bolton song.
I know. I could tell you, but I don't want to tell you.
No, you don't have to.
Be a mystery.
I loved, you know, I was listening to the record, and then all of a sudden there's like this trumpet vocal, like, I don't want to say duel, I should guess duet or something like that. Gorgeous.
We did. Yeah, it's duet.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, it's just like, sonically, I was not expecting it.
Oh, man.
And it's like with the muted trumpet and everything.
Yeah.
So sick.
Dude, that's Tyler on the trumpet. What? Yeah, that was the song. That's the song that only has 18 words, and it's called Say, kind of as a joke. But yeah, we were at Muscle Shoals recording that song, and me and Kaneen were like deep in it, like verge of tears, trying to like figure out what parts we wanted to sing. And Billy Reed, the guy that like makes clothes that lives in Muscle Shoals, he showed up at the studio, and he was just sitting behind us, and we didn't really know him that well or anything, but we both turned around, and he was just bawling, crying. We were like, oh, that stranger's crying. Let's keep
digging.
It's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets really weird there for a minute. I wonder if we could try to do it live. I don't know. Might be too hard to do live.
Well, who, you said Tyler plays trumpet?
Yeah.
What else does he play on that song? Duplicate him or something.
Yeah, I know. Tyler's a great, like, piano player, yeah, songwriter. He's produced a bunch of stuff. He plays the drums and the trumpet, and he had a killer band called Escondido. Yeah, he rules, man.
Love that.
He did all the artwork for us as well. And then Julian's wife did all of the pictures, Emily Dorio. So it was like the whole thing was a very family unit thing. Yeah.
I love that. I know you, like, leading into the record too, read in an article about you guys losing the hard drive, yeah, as well as all of your gear. So I know you've talked about that before, but
no, yeah.
Just if you could touch on that, just.
Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like that might be like the special sauce in the record, because I don't know about you guys, but like I have a hard time like asking for help. Just in general, like if I need to move like a piece of furniture, like I don't want to ask one of my friends. I'll just like figure it out somehow. I don't know. It's bad. We should all be able to ask for help. But we were in Chicago and our van got broken into and they stole all of our computers. They stole all of our suitcases too, which like
your underwear and toothbrush and shit.
I mean, Julian has like this like crazy collection of like vintage t-shirts. And he wasn't with us at the time. He was like meeting us the next day and like calling him and being like, bro, they're gone. He was like, okay. But then we actually found him on the sidewalk, because we found the bad guys and we were like following our computers with Apple, mm-hmm, whatever, oh, yeah, those things are. And then we like pulled up to a building and I was like, guys, we're in a crime scene right now. Like, this,
call the cops. Don't what get
do
shot.
We do? I know. Yeah. And we called the cops and we just waited outside the building for like 2 hours, just in our creepy Sprinter van with the broken window.
Yeah.
Like, totally obvious with the trailer.
Yeah.
And the cops never came. And then the next day, during sound check, I was bummed. And I was like, let's try to raise 10 grand to just like buy the computers back. And they stole all of our hard drives, and we had a lot. We were mixing on the road. And we did a sound check, 40 minutes, asked for 10 grand. I felt really uncomfortable doing that. And we get off the stage, and they had raised 25 grand. And so we were able to like take that money, go back in the studio, and re-record all of the parts that were lost. And I think that we had like that, like another fervor to it, because we were like saving the record. And the fans quite literally helped us save the music. So it was like, became this like other communal part of this already really tight-knit thing. It was rad.
It's so cool.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just, again, like it shows the thing that you guys have built and how meaningful your music is to so many people. You know, something like that, I'm sure, went to every person that donated, sent it to all their fans that they had, or friends that they had been to shows with. And dude, you know what I mean? Hit whatever groups are talking about that. You know what I mean? It's like, if you have a fan club that does such things, or it's the power of people, but it's also the power of what you guys have done over your career, you know, just making music that connects so deeply with people.
Right. You know?
It's a interesting thing. Like, the biggest insurance company in the U.S. is like,
oh yeah, the biggest healthcare provider in the U.S. is GoFundMe.
You know?
Really?
Yeah.
Which is crazy, but it's, at the end of the day, it really is community, you know, whether it's, you know, actual health issues or it's, you know.
Dude, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's insane.
It's a.
Someone fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah. It's one of those.
It's but it's people, you know, it's people that feel connected to either a person or for you guys, a whole band.
Yeah.
Not only just you guys as people, what they know, but the music that speaks longer than you could directly to so many, you know.
Yeah, man.
So it's a, I think it's a beautiful thing. When I saw that story, I was like, man, that's just shows the power, you know, the power of what you guys do and the depth at which you connect with your fans, which is super cool.
It opened me up to just like trying to be more okay with like asking for help just in general.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I kind of, it's really easy to think, like, especially with social media and all that crap, like what's this life for? Kind of like a Creed song, you know? But then something like that happens, and it's like, oh, man, these are like, this is the marrow. These are real human beings. It was cool. It was cool.
I love that.
Also, I have to say this legally, but... you know, Metallica had all their shit stolen too, and they wrote Fade to Black, which is like one of their coolest songs. So,
dang.
Yeah. And so, you know, the silver lining, I guess, is it sounds like you guys got, like you said, a lot of fervor, a lot more energy put into the record. So I think that in the long term, it will pay off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We were mad too. And that, that helped as well.
I'd be out front of that building with like a crowbar,
bro,
making bad decisions.
It was hard, man. I mean, Brian in my band, he's a big guy, you know? We were like, no, don't. Stay in the band.
Yeah.
Not worth a band comes out, it's like the Many Fellows or something, like that has just your music out that they stole, and they just like start, they're filming TikToks with your music they stole out of your band.
That's great. Dude, I would love it. Go for it.
Do not rob them again. Yeah. You're just joking. Do not go for it. Yeah.
No, it's tough. And I mean, road life's tough, you know? Like, You talked about
you want to
be not in the school bus, you know? Yeah. So it's just any time that you have something stolen, it just feels like just
invasion of privacy.
Yeah. Your clothing. And
I know, like, I don't buy clothes. Like, I just have like old clothes that I've just worn forever. And it's usually some gift from some friend. So it was like all these gifts were stolen. Mm-hmm. It really made me mad.
Tough.
Stupid.
And you didn't get the computers back, but you found the shirts.
We got Julian shirts only. They were like wadded up. You could tell they were like opening a suitcase on the sidewalk and then just like leaving it and getting back in their car and going somewhere else. And we just happened to find the majority of Julian's super.
His undies were missing though.
Yeah.
Mm. They were probably sniffing them.
Sold them online.
That's actually all they stole. I like to say they stole the computers, but they really just stole the underwear.
Yeah.
Sell them online, dude.
Ugh.
Oh. I'm sorry that happened to you, but I'm glad your record is kick ass. So there you go.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
So like let's talk about the touring that you guys have coming up too.
Yeah.
So anything that you're super excited? I saw you're going back to Pittsburgh as well.
Going back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Man, I'm just excited about really like playing these songs on the other side of releasing the record. You guys know how it is. Like you start playing new songs that aren't released yet. And it's
everyone's just like,
part of the show. Everyone's like, okay, no, don't play songs I don't know.
Play the hits.
Please. Well, the good thing about like not having any hits is you just don't have that pressure.
There is a good problem. Another silver lining.
Yeah. Give us another bass hit. No problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really excited about playing these songs and like people actually knowing the songs.
Yeah,
it's a great feeling.
It'll be fun.
Especially when the record comes out like on Friday and then that next weekend you play the show and people like kind of know the tunes and then like 3 months later they all are screaming the tunes and to see the progression of the crowd like doing their homework and practicing is cool to see.
Yeah.
It really is. What's it like when Luke Combs goes into Fast Car?
Oh.
Because it's such a beautiful cover, but it was so out of left field, in my opinion. Like,
Well, the story behind how he cut that song, he's always played that song.
Really?
Yeah, and, you know, when Luke was just getting started, before Instagram and before TikTok, he was, like, on Vine, and you would sing... He would sing like 7 second videos was like the maximum amount that you could do. I don't know if you ever had Vine or not.
I remember Vine.
And so he would sing, you know, like 7 seconds of like Cruise or whatever. And so Fast Car is one of those songs that like blew up on Vine for him a million years ago. And his dad is a huge, his dad's awesome, is a huge Tracy Chapman fan and got him into that record.
Oh,
and of
wow.
course that song. And so, when we play it live, he walks out. Usually we'll do it on an encore. I don't know what we'll do this year, but he'll walk out by himself, and then he'll just play the first couple notes, and the stadium just goes fucking apeshit, and it's awesome. And then, but he doesn't start singing the song. He usually tells a story while he plays the riff, which, like, he'll be the first person to tell you he's, like, not a guitar player. You know, like, he can strum, but I don't know how he's able to do this, but he could play that guitar riff and just talk. It's like insane.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, how do you do that? And but it's awesome. It's so much fun.
Dang.
Yeah, it's great. And it just goes over amazingly well. It's just such a timeless song that is so much fun to play live.
And what's your like on stage energy? Are you one of the guitar players that's just like chill but like slamming?
Ask Nick.
You swinging it all the way around your back, just like playing with your tongue and stuff. Where
Kurt plays steel as like one of his primary instruments, and you can tell he's like pent up aggression when he has the steel. He wants to get lead, and he's like,
"Yes,
I get to go to the front of the stage."
Yeah. And then when I get to play electric guitar, I'm just spring to the end of the catwalk and like,
really?
Yeah.
You come to the show, man.
I would love to, man. Dude.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime. If you're ever in, you know, see a show you want to do, hit me up.
Sometimes I wish that, like, I love how bass players are always like the laid back guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wish there were more bass players like running out to the front. But, like, it'd be really hard to do because you don't have, like, a solo.
Yeah.
You're just out there and you're still just, like holding dum, it down.
Actually, you know what's really funny is our bass player, Matt, is exceptional and he's so good. And we have like a little part in the set where, you know, some of the guys will sing a song and the band guys will sing a tune. And then, you know, we get our little moments, you know. And so Matt will play bass solo. And he's got this thing he worked up. It's like Victor Wooten-y kind of shred bass thing, you know.
Oh,
it's really cool. And Luke will be like, walk out to the thrust. But he's trying to play this part. And so you could like, sometimes I remember we played Tortuga and he's like, I fucked up my solo because I didn't think Luke was going to make me walk and I can't play this and walk at the same time.
So wild.
Yeah.
That's great.
But no, I always say like Kurt is he's a cartoon character just as a human in terms of like niceness. Like if you lined up like the nicest people you know, Kurt's in your top five. I don't even know the people you know, but I know he's there. And then also like just knowing Kurt now, it's very fun watching him play because he is at the like 12 out of 10 level of enjoyment the entire time he's playing up there.
Dang.
Which is awesome.
Right on.
It's fun, man. Yeah, yeah. Now I want to play a show now.
See?
Yeah, you just missed one last week.
Yeah.
They were supposed to go and it got their event they had got canceled.
Where were you at?
It was like a Super Bowl pre-party thing.
Right on.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude. Super Bowl was fun last night. Really boring game.
Lots
Super
of
boring
field goals, yeah.
Bad Bunny was great.
I thought it was cool.
I can't believe that was a real wedding.
Yeah.
It was.
So cool.
There was actually, my girlfriend and I were going through all the Easter eggs and that thing. The kid that he gave the Grammy to was like the kid that got detained by ICE.
No way.
Yeah. And the old lady he took a shot from is this old lady in Brooklyn that owns like this Puerto Rican social club or something.
Oh my gosh.
And there's all this like, and she was going through like, they really like, it's just like a lot of super small details that are in there that you just won't even know. Like,
dang.
Like a real wedding and everything.
Crazy.
It was cool. And I
couldn't understand any of the words.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, what is he talking about?
I did probably every like six word, you know?
Yeah. Kaylee was looking up some of the lyrics of one of his songs this morning while we were having coffee. And one of his like big hits is like a song he wrote about his dog because his dog died. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I just wish I took more photos of you. Like, you were so great. And I was just like, that's so sweet. Yeah. And then so her dog was just chilling. I'm like, take a photo of Beanie right now. And she's like, she's so cute. Just like took like 100 photos.
She should frame all of them no matter what.
Yeah. Agreed.
Frame all the iPhone dog photos.
There you go.
Dude.
That's a different kind of 70-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Order.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, brother. Well, I think we just about covered everything.
Yeah, yeah. We did.
Touring. You're going to play some shows.
We'll play shows.
New record.
Yeah. What's the release date? I don't have my phone on me.
This Friday, but this will
it'll be out by now.
Yeah, it'll be out.
I don't know either. Yeah, good. Yeah.
Is it Friday the 13th?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
It is.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Scary.
Hey, congrats on the record release because it'll be out now.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And thanks for being here and popping in and hanging with us a little bit.
Yeah, we appreciate it a lot, man. It's very, very cool.
This is great. All right, guys.
All right. Well, cheers, guys. This is Raise Ready Podcast.
All right. Bye.